Ignite your curiosity with Austin Next. We're watching Austin transform from a thriving ecosystem into a global superstar. With our host, Jason Scharf, we aspire to better comprehend the true nature of innovation. Together, we will uncover what makes a successful ecosystem and navigate the technologies shaping our future. Now let's dive into What's Next?
What is the Gundo and why did it suddenly flood my social media a few months back? Is there something to be learned from the history and current vibes of the innovation ecosystem in LA's South Bay? Today, I am joined by Isaiah Taylor, a founder building in the region, and John Coogan, who has done his own deep dive on the hub to discuss what makes it tick and the lessons other ecosystems can take from it. Isaiah is the founder of Valar Atomics. Valar is using mass-scale nuclear fission to produce cheap and abundant hydrocarbons such as jet fuel and natural gas. In his free time, you can find Isaiah hanging out with his three incredible children, flying and enjoying the fictional works of Robert Heinlein. But most relevantly to this conversation, Isaiah was the mastermind behind the Defense Tech Party bus, which some have said might be the best recent indicator that America is back. John is an entrepreneur in residence at Founders Fund. He regularly publishes YouTube videos about technology companies and Silicon Valley. He previously co-founded two startups, a nicotine company named Lucy and a food company named Soylent. He studied economics, enjoys programming, and lives with his wife, son, and two Newfoundland dogs. Please enjoy our wide-ranging discussion on the Gundo. Isaiah, John, welcome to the Austin Next podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So I think this is going to be fun. I hadn't really heard about the Gundo, which, by the way, I love that it's not like Silicon Gundo or anything of that nature, but really its own thing. I hate the Silicon Hill, Silicon Alley, Silicon Beach stuff. But yeah, until whatever, 2 months ago or whatever it was, I hadn't.
If we are gonna put like a metal, can we make it the stainless Gundo? That would be pretty
stainless
cool.
Stainless Gundo, I like it.
Stainless. Inconel Gundo.
Yeah, Inconel Gundo, 316 Gundo, something like that.
But yeah, it just kind of suddenly showed up everywhere in terms of on Twitter X, on in the media. And so I think it was just kind of good to see understanding what was going on there and how we think about micro hubs as part of broader things and connectivity. So I wanted to start off with how are we defining the Gundo? Is it really just El Segundo or is it something broader?
I don't know, Isaiah, you want to take that or how do you think about it?
I mean, we like to opportunistically loop in companies into the Gundo as we want to. Yeah, there's a whole like aerospace and defense hard tech thing that's grown up around LAX and even up into Santa Monica. Santa Monica has an incredibly rich history in like aerospace and defense, and then I think it like slowly migrated south, and then it even migrated as south as like Long Beach, like Space Beach. But I think El Segundo has retained a lot of a small town Americana feeling while being in this epicenter. And so I think that Gundo is really like the epicenter, but there's a lot of space tech and defense tech all around it as well. And like I said, opportunistically, we'll pull people into the Gundo category as we like them.
Yeah, but when I think of like
SpaceX needs to be included, even though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. SpaceX, I mean, it's still like it's 2 miles down the road and their original building is just down the road. So they totally count. They're Gundo for sure.
So what about Anduril? Is that count or is that too far south?
Spiritually.
If you're not from SoCal, then yes, Anduril is definitely in Gundo. if you're here, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, there's a bunch of transpositions. It's like just not Silicon Valley. Is it Southern California? Is it literally El Segundo? Kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's just like whatever's fun.
Is it all kind of connects together? And then given the history of kind of space and defense there, I mean, when we think about it from a vertical and sectors perspective, is it really just space and defense? I know you're in energy. I say, like, how are we thinking about what verticals kind of consist in it, or is it just stuff that's hard to do?
Yeah, it's not just stuff that's hard to do. There's a lot of software that's hard to do, and we do have some people working on software here, but I think the vibe and like what attracts people to starting companies here and working here is doing really, really hard things with atoms and tapping into, I think one of the things that's really powerful about like the Silicon Valley mindset is it just the attitude of like, yes, you can do that incredibly hard thing in software. And you run into people all the time who are doing something incredibly hard in software. And we have a really similar thing with atoms. You have people within walking distance doing extremely hard material science and, you know, low level science that's quickly evolving into technology in a lab. And there's just this like, it's in the water that you can do those things and you have to do those things.
How do you think about it as the convergence between those things? I mean, I think we've seen a lot of the last, you know, two decades really being the software revolution is now as we're moving into, you know, software and AI coming into the physical world, that hardware is becoming interesting again. And a lot of times that seemingly having to take place outside of Silicon Valley.
Yeah. I mean, software stays interesting. Like software is a highly leveraged way to manipulate reality, but it certainly got untethered a little bit from being able to do that on a material level. And that's incredibly important. It didn't stop being important. It just stopped being maybe popular to do. And it stopped being something that the brightest young people wanted to immediately jump in with both feet. I think we got a little bit of a, you know, insecurity about it. We developed this thought that like, oh, hardware is too hard. It takes too long. You actually can't build things very quickly. And the thing that's just really addictive about software, I think, is that you can just download the IDE and you could start building and you can have something built by the end of the day. Right. And that's also true about hardware, by the way. Like if you have the right tool sets, you can build something incredible by the end of the day and you can hold it in your hands. You can see it. But it does take a little bit to get over that like barrier. There's just a little bit more cost to get to that level where you have that tool set. And I just think like culturally, we stopped building those tool sets in those places where people are doing that experimentation, that play.
How much do you think that had to do with almost the celebration or the lack of celebration in hardware and achievement, right? A lot of times we kind of point to the 1971 as the, you know, what happened in 1971 to drive things down, but a lot of it was we didn't have any moon landings and things that people could physically see versus a lot of the great innovations that we've had in the last, 20, 30 years. It's harder to point like, yes, we launched this software and I'm going to point you to that great innovation.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we ran out of like contemporary heroes. I don't know. What do you think, John?
Yeah. I don't know if it's like the celebrations thing. I mean, everyone has a different answer for the 1971 question. It's tricky. Like, I mean, I tend to think it's just like, you know, since bits move faster than atoms, like you really do compound wealth faster there. Like, just look at, you know, at Founders Fund, like, you know, two of the core investments have been SpaceX and Facebook and SpaceX is an incredible, incredible company, but Facebook like just was able to grow faster because it wasn't in a hardware environment. And I think we're seeing that with the AI stuff, like getting to 100 million users really fast with ChatGPT and just like software moves faster and that leads to higher growth rates. It leads to faster, you know, like economic value capture. And so like, you know, people make a rational decision to go and work in the industry that provides like the most economic value, the quickest. I think some of the backlash is driven by the fact that a lot of the later stage software companies in the last like kind of bull market bubble were pretty zero sum and pretty cynical, and you could kind of tell that the founders were designing something that wasn't even really a tech company, wasn't really solving any fundamental technical problem, was just kind of like trying to shave off a small percentage of a market cap from some big legacy player and then flip the company to them and take out a bunch of secondary on the way, wind up partying a bunch. And it was just like, this is not anything to be, it's like good for them. They made a bunch of money, but like, it's not anything to be like, you know, it's not leaving a dent in the universe. It's not in the Steve Jobs philosophy. It's not in Elon's philosophy. Like, it's not addressing any real problem. It's truly just like someone making a living, and you know, that's fine. I don't really see any major problem with it, but it's just like, it's just not cool.
It's just boring. It's not inspiring. It's not something you want to like give your life to. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Giving, you know, somebody going out and making a couple $100 million on secondaries is awesome. Like, great. Yeah. You can throw some sick parties, but like as an IC who wants to work on something insane, like that's just not that inspiring to go and see that happen versus, yeah, you're right. Like SpaceX has a lower market cap than Facebook. But if you look at the people who came out of the SpaceX journey, like those people are on fire, like they're on fire and they've been inspired to go change the world. And I see a little bit less of that coming out of admittedly like higher market cap software companies.
Yeah.
I think a lot about, I mean, I have, you know, small kids. And so I think a lot about kind of the inspiration moments and how it is that they think about it. So like, you know, the Starship recent launch and had them watch that. And my oldest is 10 and he's just been watching the Neuralink recent demonstration. And then, you know, the stuff going out on Figure and Aptronik and Optimus. And it's so much easier, I think, for kids to just be absorbing those types of imagery. Then again, back to the, and I think some of the zero sum comes from a lot of, the, especially like the social networks and like we were all network effects, right? So you can't really have lots of different winners in when you're driven by network effects.
That's not what I'm referring to. I would imagine that like, yes, there was like massive disruption and there was a huge power law phenomenon with the social networks, but, I actually don't think those are zero sum games in the sense that like yes, it might be like a little more boring, but like clearly like the amount of economic value created by Facebook on the internet was like very positive sum, and like more people are creating, and like the aggregate value of like the creator economy, the aggregate value of like all the content that's posted is definitely growing and positive. The negative sum or zero sum mindset is more like, it's harder to go after a company like Facebook because they have that mm-hmm. that's actually, a place where I wouldn't expect to really see that type of activity. It's more like there's some sort of legacy, you know, Fortune 500 company that's operating off of like, you know, 30 to 40 year old software. And you're just like, you know, shaving off a small percentage of their market and then selling back to them essentially but you don't really have any goal of like, oh, I don't need to actually disrupt them. They're not really doing anything wrong. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to like, you know, effectively serve as like a tax on this big company. And that's kind of like the plan from day one. And that's just kind of boring. For a long time, it was a very effective way to make money. It probably still is an effective way to make money. But it's just, yeah, it's just not really like changing anything structurally.
It's a little bit of like a labor arbitrage. It's like, yeah. I can pull the engineers into the room because I have the sexy branding and we just did the round and it's early and it's fast. And then
they also make more money. Like they really, like, economically, like this kind of hustle, this like bezel really does work.
Yeah. Like, it's almost like come get some equity in the product team that's eventually going to be subsumed. And then you're going to have more equity than the ICs who just started at the big corp.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, my background's all in bio and just seeing from the highly regulated environment, there's so much Stone Age software that the new stuff is, I think, follows John this path that you just said, but versus creating truly disruptive, even just ways of doing it, even talking about within software, because it needs to be drastically changed. But instead, because of the way adoption works, because of the way the regulatory works. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to make this new amazing software that does this. But by the way, we're still using fax machines in health. Like, okay, that's not, you know, that's not really being able to drive the type of innovation that we all, I think, want to see happening, regardless of whether it's in, you know, atoms or bits. Sure. So can I, you want to say something, John?
No, no, I was just saying, I was saying for sure.
Yeah. So how would you kind of go getting back to the Gundo itself? And then I want to dive a little bit into the history of it. But again, being far away, just seeing, you know, the pictures of the bus and everything on the hackathon, how would you describe the culture and community that were going into it?
Yeah, I think the culture is, I mean, it has to be extremely ambitious. That's kind of table stakes for tech. It's like extremely ambitious, but it's particularly ambitious in the reality of atoms, like the understanding that we actually can create genuine technological inflections in a realm that makes the real world extremely different, and actually creates physical products. Not that software is not in reality, but it's this is actually the benefit of software, I think, is that the reality has really tight constraints on it. And so you can create inflections in a much more constrained environment, which it's, I agree, like easier to inflect and make money. But the scope of the change of reality, I think, is much larger when you have the confidence to do something with atoms. Like, you can go to Mars. No matter how good your software company gets, it's probably not going to take humanity to Mars, unless it's then taking that money and resources and funneling it to something that is. And so I think the culture is, it's hardcore. It's really hardcore. And we are, I know there's a lot of people like thinking about moving to Gundo right now and seeing kind of the hype. I would actually put out a tiny bit of caution, which is like, the El Segundo has had deep tech operating it for a long time. And, don't sort of get all caught up in the moment that's happening. Recognize, like, there is a lot of embedded talent that we're trying to tap into, and it's a very, very intentional. It's a dichotomy between like really, really slow, intentional competence, and then also deep ambition, and it does not mesh well with things that are too flashy or hypey. Like, there's a pretty strong anti-ZERP phenomenon. Vibe going on here. Like, we like to dunk on anything that's zerpy or that has a short, you know, shelf life. If you're not working on something that's going to take decades and billions of dollars, then, like, you know, go play somewhere else.
I love that.
Well, it's funny that you said, like, there's all this history there, and I really appreciated, John, and we'll put it in the show notes, the video that you had put together, kind of looking at El Segundo. But so I actually lived in Redondo Beach. And for people who don't know the area, like, my wife worked at actually the Aerospace Corp. So in El Segundo. Oh, yeah. So that's why we were there. It was, you know, 10 minutes away. And at least when I was there from like 2011 to 2013, I never would have thought of it as like a startup hub. It was all Northrop and aerospace and it was all these very large old companies. And so understanding, like, first, was I wrong? Like, it's just, was I unaware of what was going on at the time? And then how much, to your point, Isaiah, with the history, and how much connection is there to those kind of legacy firms? Or is it all like, we're going to go disrupt all these guys and we don't want anything to do with them?
It's certainly not, I don't want anything to do with them. I think what people miss is, like, you have to have generals, and the generals have to lead resources and people and tools. And you can't go lead that where there are no resources and people and tools. So it's not that there's a continuation. There's a very clear continuation from what we're calling legacy. But remember, like, these companies were not legacy forever. These companies have not been existing for 1,000 years. They're legacy because they were extremely successful. They built incredible things for a long time. And now, you know, the generals of those companies, the Kelly Johnsons of Lockheed, have aged out, but the people and the tools are still there. And yeah, it takes new generals to go lead those resources to, you know, create new things. So there's a direct line and continuation for sure.
So John, I kind of first saw it obviously in this recent viral moment, but what was it that, how did the Gundo kind of really come across your radar enough to say, hey, I want to go, you know, put together this, you know, the video and the piece on it?
Yeah. probably talking to Scott Nolan, a partner at Founders Fund, who was one of the first employees of SpaceX, maybe like first 20-ish or something around there. And I mean, SpaceX was in El Segundo at that time. This must have been like 2005, 2006. I don't remember the exact date, but he was, yeah, like fresh out of college working there, and was always kind of interested in that. And then when I joined Founders Fund, most of the team is up in San Francisco, but Peter lives down in LA, and then Scott also lives down in LA. So Scott was like one of the first partners that I got to know and got to hang out with a bunch because we were in LA, and it was easier to see him than go up to SF and see everyone else. And Scott was also working on a bunch of interesting things. Like he's been like one of the, like, you know, focused on what he calls multiple chapter companies, essentially this idea that, you know, some companies there's like, it, you know, the business model is what it is from, you know, as soon as you get product market fit, as soon as you get Series A, whereas SpaceX is probably be like the best example of a multiple chapter company that's where there's this idea of like residual capability. They build the rockets, they lower mass to orbit cost, and then they are able to launch something like Starlink. So they have like a completely different business. And now there's this, you know, question about like, is SpaceX an internet company or are they a space company? Where are they going to make their money? And so Scott was always focused on really interesting stuff there, and he lived down in the area. And so that's kind of how I learned about it. And then I think Augustus met Mike Solana through Pirate Wires. I think he was just reading Mike's newsletter and reached out to him, and we had like a offsite thing, and we invited Augustus, and so got to know him a little bit. And I actually ran into him these networks are like so small. I'm thinking about the first time that I met Augustus was at Josh Steinman's house. He was having like a cigar night, and a bunch of guys came, a bunch of random people. And it was like kind of a lot of hard tech, oddly. It was one of the first like LA, like random, just hang out with a bunch of entrepreneurs and tech people. And like almost no one was working on software there. And I remember Augustus just like, he popped into some conversation. I think we were talking about like China broadly. And he was like, oh yeah, well, like, have you seen what they're doing to the Gobi Desert? And I was like, oh no, what are they doing in the Gobi Desert? He's like, yeah, they're completely like, you know, terraforming it. They're making it rain out there. They have like one of the largest, like, you know, cloud seeding operations in the world. And I was just like super interested. So talked to him a bunch. And then we went out to the Salton Sea and went and looked at all the like dried up lakes out there. It was a lot of fun. And then just kind of like, yeah, just more like getting to know the guys.
Yeah. And it's funny how they're all, as you said, the small communities. Augustus just was announced as a Thiel Fellowship.
Yeah.
So, how describe for me, like the physical nature of like El Segundo as a startup hub, because not a lot of people, it's been a decade, so this is what I'm trying to understand what's changed. Like, not a lot of people lived there. Everyone kind of lived around, and you commuted into these big areas. And so trying to understand, you need this kind of the creative collisions to happen in these hubs. So is there a lot more live, work, play? Is it people are going into just these different areas of, is it kind of a startup, you know, alley of sorts?
Yeah, I think I've never lived in the Bay Area, so I assume that there are areas like this there as well, but it is very close. Like, there's a very small geographic region where all of these startups are located, and that's actually really, really important. Like, we can walk to each other's factories very I mean, it's, you know, literally two, three blocks is walking distance to a bunch of different companies working on very ambitious things. And that is really, really important. You were asking like, what's like the live, work, play areas? Like, where do you run into people? And honestly, like, it's going to sound funny, but like the beach, you'll run into people on the beach. So every Friday we go and burn a bunch of cardboard on the beach, and you're going to run into engineers. You're going to run into, you know, startup founders who are working on crazy stuff, and you'll begin interesting conversations. And, but that geographical closeness is a huge benefit. One of the things that's nice, particularly about El Segundo, is that it's kind of a small town in the middle of LA. So you have all of the LA resources and crazy stuff going on, but El Segundo still feels like a small town. It's walking distance. We go to the same coffee shop, the same diner, and these sorts of things. And, that's almost impossible to overrate, I think, actually, being able to run into somebody on the street who is working on really, really hard problems and is like thinking about, planetary scale change and the technological path to get there. It's in the water. It has to be in the water. You're really, I think you're highly affected by the type of people you run into every day. And that's when people visit, I think that they're like instantly addicted to. It's like you just keep having these conversations. And who is it that was talking about? I can't remember who it is that talks about like, I think it was Paul Graham. What do the different cities tell you? Mm-hmm. New York tells you I need to get richer. San Francisco tells you I need to, I can't remember what he said about SF, but I think El Segundo is like, I need to get more cracked. I need to.
you're telling that story like that's what PG said,
and
you're
no,
just
no,
like
this is my
you're just like dot dot dot, and now it's Isaiah talking. It sounds like PG was saying El Segundo.
I'm adding the El Segundo version to Paul Graham's statement. You need to get more cracked. Like you get here, and that's what you feel instantly. That was one of my employees actually who added the El Segundo is telling me I need to get more cracked.
I mean, it feels like early YC to me. This was like I did YC in summer 2012, and that was like kind of late, since I think YC started in 2005. Like we were already like one of the later classes, but the early days it was like one of the main benefits of YC was that like everyone had dinner together, and that's still like a thing. But then like during pandemic, like they went remote, and like now Gary's like kind of, you know, restructuring, rebuilding the organization, but it's still like, it's much bigger. The El Segundo thing, it's like, there's like five main companies. It feels very much like they are a cohort in the same way that like, you know, Airbnb and Reddit were in, or Reddit and Twitch were in the same YC batch. And like, they're just like super, super close connections. And for a long time, YC was like, everyone lives in these like, you know, terrible houses. And like, we lived in this house in Sunnyvale that had like algae in the pool, and we would take our dishes outside and hose them down with a hose to do it faster. It was just like living in basically like squalor, just like a bunch of hacker guys who just wanted to like code, and that was it, and just go back to coding and just like build and work and just do a bunch of stuff, and everyone would live like very close to each other. And there wasn't any focus on like being in San Francisco or being, you know, in some area. So they created like a much more, you know, dense community. It's just fun to see. I don't know.
It is interesting that you have these kind of layers of communities, because it drives me a little bit nuts, I think, when, you know, all of the Bay Area is referred to as, you know, San Francisco. And it's like, you've got everything down from like, you know, Palo Alto and San Jose and up to Mountain View and up to San Francisco. And it really is a kind of a multi-hub, you know, region. And it's interesting, then you see the same thing. Like, you feel like, you know, the Gundos is kind of like this small microcosm across the much broader LA ecosystem. So how does it really interact? I mean, you were talking, John, about, you know, it felt very close, and, you know, Peter lives down there and Scott lives down there, and they're able to kind of connect in. But, you know, as also someone who's lived in LA and knowing how far it is to get around, like, oh, it's 10 miles away. Good, see you in an hour. does there feel like an interconnectivity of in LA, and how are these micro hubs kind of building into that?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's like, you know, there's a general like metropolitan area, which is probably defined by, you know, the distance one person could drive in about an hour in traffic is like, you know, commuter distance. So, you know, if Isaiah wants to hire someone who, you know, lives in Santa Monica, they can commute into the office and work, and that's fine. And they're not going to need to uproot their life or family to take that job. Now, if you wanted to go and recruit someone who lives in Bakersfield and it's a 2-hour, 3-hour drive, like probably a different conversation. So not in the commuter metro area. But all these terms are like kind of silly. It doesn't really do much, but I don't know. I mean, within Gundo, we can go even narrower and talk about like the Smoky Hollow neighborhood, which is like where most of this activity is happening. Because you're right that there's like Raytheon and like Lockheed and Boeing and stuff, and like they're more on the north side, like right near LAX, and the stuff that you're seeing on Twitter and X with like Augustus is very much like on the south side of El Segundo, and a little bit further inland. I guess it's kind of like in the middle south, right?
Well, yes. Smoky Hollow is right up against the refinery. So yeah, all of us can look outside the window and see the El Segundo refinery right there. Yeah. Probably why it's called Smoky Hollow. I've actually not gotten a great answer to that.
It's probably smoky. Yeah.
Yeah. Smoky from the refinery. But yeah, that's the high density of these little shops actually that I think a lot of them were created, during the space shuttle program, where you had a lot of smaller shops building components for the space shuttle. And then, for a while, those kind of became like creative spaces, and now we're turning them back into, you know, places where startups can get their first feet and start to put down labs and fabrication and that kind of stuff. And then probably move into larger facilities.
Yeah. I think about the reason I asked, to your point, that the metro and the CCA and these different things are arbitrary lines. But when I think about, especially now, and we're talking about like these convergence of like bits and atoms and having the different ideas kind of cross over and having that kind of density of creative collisions where you have, and this was, you know, Jim Breyer said this, I think this was like last year at a talk where it was that, when we were talking about Austin in this case, where you'll have centers of excellence having their density, but those centers of excellence don't have to be together. So you can have like the quantum group, you can have the bio group, you can have the defense people all kind of being close by to each other. They don't necessarily all have to be downtown on top of each other. But then you ask the question of how does that cross collaboration start to happen? And so that's really what I'm thinking about when you have the, you know, the broader LA ecosystem or the broader Silicon Valley or any of these things, and how do these kind of little micro centers of excellence play into it at the next level?
Yeah, like I think we get to draw on those resources. We get to draw on the fact that there's a lot of places to live within, you know, half an hour driving distance of here.
The question, like, in my opinion, I completely disagree with the premise of this question. Like, I don't think like there's like that much like centers of excellence. Like, I don't think that's how people think about how companies are built or how innovation happens. Like, I agree with Isaiah's answer that like, yeah, the best part about LA is that there's like some good places to live, but I don't think there's any sort of like, oh, well, like, yes, there's like this part of Los Angeles greater area that like is specializing in this or that or something like that. Like, I think a lot of this stuff is like very organic. And then the question of like, how does the cross-pollination happen? Like, it's like people texting each other. It's just like human communication. Like, there's no like structure to it. It feels like not a very valuable thing to try and like quantify or like understand the structure of, in my opinion.
I'm 100% on the organic side. I think if you try to do something like this top down, it's, you're going to fail miserably, right? From that perspective.
I agree. I think it'd be a mistake to like, well, first of all, I think it would be a mistake to try to make something like El Segundo happen. Right. It's much more a thing that you as an entrepreneur choose selfishly because it is happening. And then you can try to understand the reasons why. I also think it'd be a mistake to try to copy paste it anywhere. If you are, you know, trying to build a multi-generational company that's going to get extremely large, you want the best possible resources in your court. And El Segundo is, you know, probably the place for that. If you are building something extremely hard with material science and with atoms and manufacturing and these things because of the culture and the resources that are around you. But yeah, being too prescriptive about trying to make it happen here or anywhere else, I think would be a bit of a mistake, especially if you're an entrepreneur. Like you just have to surround yourself with the best you possibly can. And that was my conclusion on El Segundo.
Yeah, no, I think if you try to make it happen, especially because usually the people who are trying to make it happen are not the builders and funders. So that's where things start to go off. And I do want to think I 1,000% also agree of trying to make, you know, trying to copy and paste anything, like trying to copy and paste the Gundo or trying to be like Silicon XYZ. It's really about understanding the first principles that drive your particular ecosystem and leaning into that and then attracting the right founders and the funders and that really will then drive it to the next level. But I do want to understand, are there lessons that can be learned about that can be taken to other ecosystems from what happened in the Gundo, what's going on? I almost want to start with just, again, how it came across, you know, my radar and all like the memeable and viral kind of moments. Why do you think that the Gundo was so primed to kind of blow up in the way that it did, at least from a just noise perspective?
Honestly, like I think if you're looking for, yeah, like, I was going to say, I think if you're looking for the big secret in that, it's literally probably like 4 or 5 people who decided that it is our business to build incredible things and to like, it's our business to control the weather. It's our business to make energy 10 times cheaper. It's our business to fix, you know, the base of American manufacturing. And
yeah, but that's not why it blew up. Like,
yeah,
because like you guys could literally all be in stealth mode and you guys could be making a lot of money. Like you could be an under the radar company selling millions and millions of dollars worth of stuff and just never do press, never talk about anything. And it'd be great. Everything would be fine. But that's not what's happening. And the reason it's not happening is because like there's just a cracked guy who showed up and he has a sense of humor, essentially. He's like a lot of the people in El Segundo historically have been engineers who have not really had, they're not been good posters, essentially. And Augustus showed up and he's like a great poster. And then he kind of like led the way and a bunch of other people came in and bounced off of him and everyone jokes and they create this like cinematic universe now. But like, I really think like he's driving a huge part of like why people are hearing about this broadly, just because he made it fun and he drew a bunch of attention and it was like the right time and it struck a chord because people, all the things that we talked about like the real building that's happening and, you know, backlash to negative sum, you know, software or, you know, ZERP, all these different trends, like Augustus was able to like, you know, kind of, you know, take that and seed like a very, very funny, very interesting, just meme. It's just a good meme.
So what's good the downside meme. of that kind of viral moment? I mean, we look at,
oh, there's tons of downsides.
Yeah. It was Miami's.
Yeah. I mean, like you could get over your skis and be more of a marketer than a builder. And that's why I think like you've seen Augustus post last because he's mission accomplished. Like he did the meme and it's everything he needs. And he doesn't really need the Gundo meme to be bigger. He's not an influencer. If he was, he would be like, now I'm selling Gundo t-shirts. And so I need it to be bigger and bigger and bigger, but that's not, he has a real business to build. And so he's like, obviously you can clearly tell that like all the Gundo guys are basically like, yep, we accomplished that. We reached the height of the mountain, and now we're not going to be influencers. We're going to be company builders. And so we have a reputation. And if we need to put out an announcement or we need to hire someone, we have audiences. We can, like, you know, kind of amplify things. We're plugged into the right capital networks. I think pretty much every Gundo company is funded at this point, or all the core ones. They've all, like, raised, you know, the money that they needed or the money that they wanted, or that they have enough to get going. None of them are like, oh, we're going to have to shut down next month, which is great. And now it's just like, it's time to just do the work. And that's obviously going to, like, going to take decades, going to take a long time. So, you know,
amen. We do the work.
Time to build.
So are there any base lessons that other places can learn from what's been happening besides build and have someone who has a great sense of humor posting?
Yeah. I don't know if, I don't know if the Augustus plan can be copied. Like, it's just, it's clearly very, he's a natural at it. It's not like he read some book, and like applied the lessons. He's just like,
I will say that the thing that can be copied and should be copied anywhere is just to not be apologetic. If you,
that's a good one.
Just like, if you believe something about the world, then do not be apologetic. Say it without any qualification, say it over and over. And, that may or may not be the same set of principles that's here, but, and you might be wrong. And then, like, the world will tell you that you're wrong, but you have to actually, like, put it out there to find out. So that's probably the thing that's most applicable everywhere else.
Yeah. I like that. That's actually a kind of like anti-mimetic, in the sense that, like, the worst thing you could do would be to go to a city that's not San Francisco and then say, like, we're exactly like San Francisco.
Yeah.
Like, obviously El Segundo would be like, it would be a disaster if they tried to claim that it's like the best place to build AI or whatever. It's like, no, like, go to Stanford. Like, we know what, like, the Bay does well, and that's fine. I like that answer a lot, Isaiah. That's good.
Yeah, understanding the first principles of the ecosystem, lining up the founders lining up with that. So if you want to, as you said, you want to build AI, go to the Bay. If you
it's not like that strict about like, oh, you have to do something here or there. It's more just like don't try and clone something else. Like, just like, find your own.
No, I'm not. And again, I'm not saying it's strict as much as that there are, the momentum effect is going to be stronger if you're in an area that has that as its kind of core principles. So if I want to build the next cell therapy company, I should probably be in Boston. Right. And so, and then if you think about the ecosystems and just knowing what they're good at versus trying to copy. And that was, I spent 15 years in San Diego, and I think that was one of the biggest issues, was it was always trying to, especially on the bio side, trying to be exactly like the Bay. We're going to create the next Genentech. We're going to create the next Amgen, and focused in that direction. And then all of a sudden you had Illumina, Dexcom, ResMed, these great companies that kind of appeared that no one was actually no one locally was investing in, because everyone was very focused on, we want to be just like the Bay, instead of understanding what they're great at.
That happens a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a big fund in LA that went, like, they were like, oh yeah, we're going to invest in all the best Los Angeles companies. And they missed Snapchat, ServiceTitan, Anduril, SpaceX. Like, they just somehow missed all of, like, the core LA companies. And it was because, like, their thesis was like, we want to invest in companies. The stated thesis, or the stated preference, was we want to invest in the best Los Angeles based companies. But then the revealed preference was that they wanted to invest in the companies that were, like, loud about being in Los Angeles. And that was a very different thing. Like, yeah. SpaceX wasn't like, SpaceX still to this day is not like, we're a Gundo company, we're an El Segundo company, we're an LA company, we're a Californian company. It's like, it's just like, it's its own thing. It goes where they need to be. Even in that Don Lemon interview, like, he starts off, the first question's like, oh, we're here in Texas, like, you're moving Tesla here, and Elon's just like, no, like, we're just expanding everywhere. Like, this is a huge facility. It's the bit three times bigger than the Pentagon. We built it in 18 months or whatever. But, like, this is, we're just like, we're just massive. Like, you can't even comprehend the scale. It was like kind of a badass answer.
Yeah. And the Gigafactory, it's like 20 minutes from my house. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Just like don't try to ape things too much. I think that's where VCs go wrong a lot. They try to ape things or like try to figure out what's being aped. It's just that's like, just the,
that's like the more cracked reinterpretation of Gerard.
Gerard, don't ape things.
There basically. It's like,
well, this has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate you guys coming on. So I always want to end with the same question is, what's next?
What's next for what in particular? What's next for...
For the Gundo, for you guys. It's as open-ended as we want to think about it.
I mean, I think what's next for the Gundo is we have each company here has a lot of unbelievably ambitious things to pull off, and we have to work extremely hard on it. I think, I will say there's a spotlight. There's a lot of people thinking about El Segundo as the spot. And I think probably what's next for the people who are here is making sure that people don't get overheated with it and don't try to import a lot of companies that are like looking for funding for a thing that's flashy and try to pull in, you know, some quick VC money because it's a hot thing. Like I said, if you're thinking about moving to the Gundo and you're not working on something that is going to take decades and billions of dollars, like probably build it somewhere else. But yeah, we have a lot of work to do.
I wonder if Gundo or the Gundo is like an institution or just a meme in a moment in time. Because it is just a few square miles. And like, if you're actually going to manufacture, you know, like dozens of nuclear reactors, like
thousands
of nuclear reactors, like there's just you're going to have a gigafactory. It's not going to be in Gundo.
Yes.
And that's okay. And so there's a question about like clearly, I don't know, it's hard for something that's 5 square miles or whatever to become this like institution. And so
it's almost just a
moment in time. It's like it's like a relic from like, you know, we're going to look back at like 2023, 2024 is like this time when a bunch of, you know, young American builder engineers got together. And the way I see it is like the markets were in absolute turmoil. Like startups were like in chaos. Everyone had their like zerpy startups that were getting destroyed, trading at like 140x revenue multiple. And there was this big moment of uncertainty about like where the market goes. There's like this last gasp of like people pivoting to AI and trying to, you know, find the next thing there. And in the midst of all that, there's like this small group of like 5 or so guys that are just like, we're going to go a very different direction. We're going to go off and do this thing. And it was like so countercultural that everyone just fell in love with it. Everyone just loves it online. They're just like, this is awesome. Everyone's rooting for this. This is good and pure and awesome. And then, but I don't know that it's going to be this like thing that keeps going, because I hope that the companies are successful. And if the companies are successful, like they're going to have to expand and grow and leave and go to Hawthorne and go to other areas. I'm sure some will still have some operations in El Segundo, the city, but like I think that idea of like Gundo, like,
well, what I hope is
might,
that there's
might,
a place
it
where
it just
where
be
talent,
a moment in time.
Yeah, what I hope is there's still a place where talent can always go where incredibly hard things are being worked on. I think that's maybe one thing that I hope stays around for like the next 30 years is that there is a pressure cooker somewhere.
Sure.
Where if you are extremely, extremely cracked at something, you can show up with your skills and your talents, and there's a mission that you can join that's going somewhere truly extraordinary. And yeah, maybe it's not in El Segundo as a city, maybe it's in Hawthorne, maybe it's around there. But I think that gathering point for people who love the United States and are incredibly talented at an extremely hard skill can go and find that mission. And even if that's way broader than Gundo, I think that's the spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like a broadening of the definition is coming, not a narrowing. Like the more constraints people try and put on it, the less like Lindy it will be.
I think we started with what was the Gundo and how far does it go down? And I think as your point is, it's going to become much broader than just the actual borders of the town. I love it.
Yeah.
John, Isaiah, awesome. This has been great. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us. Yep. This is fun.
So what's next, Austin? We're glad you've joined us on this journey. Please subscribe at your favorite podcast catcher. Leave us a review and let your colleagues know about us. This will help us grow the podcast and continue bringing you unique interviews and insights. Thanks again for listening, and see you soon.